lifting her face to his. His lips met hers, and just for a moment she thrilled to their touch. But the kiss became clumsy, overbearing. His teeth mashed against hers, his tongue forcing its way into her mouth so that she had to pull back. He seemed untroubled. His hands slid over her buttocks, pulling her so close that she could feel him pressed against her. He was gazing at her, eyes dulled with desire.
"You want to find a hotel room, or here?"
She stared at him. "It must be him," she told herself. "Everything said so, but how could B feel so altered from what he had written?"
"What's the matter?" he said, seeing some of this pass across her face. "Too cold for you? Or you don't want a hotel? Too risky?"
This was wrong. She backed out of his embrace. "I'm sorry, I don't think..." She lifted a hand to her head.
"You don't want to do it here?"
She frowned. Then she looked up at him. "Reggie, do you know what deliquescent means?"
"Deli... what?"
She closed her eyes, then opened them again. "I need to go," she mumbled. Suddenly she felt horribly sober.
"But you like playing away. You like a bit of action."
"I like a bit of what?"
"Well, I'm hardly the first, am I?"
She blinked. "I don't understand."
"Oh, don't play the innocent, Jennifer. I saw you, remember? With your other fancy man at Alberto's, all over him. I knew what you were saying to me earlier, making that reference to it in front of everyone."
"My fancy man?"
He inhaled on his cigarette, then stubbed it out sharply under his heel. "So that's how you want to play it, huh? What is it? Do I not measure up because I didn't understand some stupid word?"
"What man?" She had hold of his shirt sleeve now, unable to help herself. "Who are you talking about?"
He shook her off, angrily. "Are you playing games with me?"
"No," she protested. "I just need to know who you saw me with."
"Jesus, I knew I should have gone with Mo when I had the chance. At least she appreciates a man. She's not a prick tease," he spat.
Suddenly his features, flushed and angry, were flooded with light. Jennifer spun round to see Lawrence holding open the fire escape door. He took in the illuminated spectacle of his wife and the man who was stepping away from her. Reggie, head down, swept past Lawrence and into the building without a word, wiping his mouth. She stood, frozen.
"Lawrence, it's not what you..."
"Get inside," he said. "I just..." "Get inside. Now."
His voice was low, apparently calm. After the briefest hesitation, she stepped forward and into the stairwell. She made for the door, preparing to rejoin the party, still trembling with confusion and shock. But as they passed the lift, he grabbed her wrist and spun her around. She looked down at his hand, gripping her, then up at his face.
"Don't think you can humiliate me, Jennifer," he said quietly.
"Let go of me!"
"I mean it. I'm not some fool you can..."
"Let go of me! You're hurting me!" She pulled backwards.
"Listen to me." A muscle pulsed in his jaw. "I won't have it. Do you understand me? I won't have it."
His teeth were gritted. There was so much anger in his voice. "Lawrence?"
"Larry. You call me Larry,"
he shouted, his free fist lifting. The door opened, and that man from accounts stepped out. He was laughing, his arm around the girl from earlier. He registered the scene and his smile faded.
"Ah, we were just stepping out for some air, sir,"
he said awkwardly. It was at that moment that Lawrence let go of her wrist, and Jennifer, seizing her chance, pushed past the couple and ran down the stairs.
"There are things that I love so much about you, but there are things I hate, too. I guess you should know that I think more and more about the things that bother me about you now. The time you slaughtered that lobster. The way you shouted and clapped at those cows to get them out of the road. Why couldn't we have just waited for them to pass? We could have missed the cinema. The haphazard way you chop vegetables. Your constant negativity. It took me 3 coats of paint to paint over where you left your phone number on my wall in red pen. I know I was redecorating, but it was a complete waste of paint.
Male to female, by a letter. Chapter 9.
Anthony sat on a bar stool, one hand around an empty coffee cup, watching the staircase that led to street level for any sign of a pair of slim legs descending. Occasionally, a couple would walk down the stairs into Alberto's, exclaiming about the unseasonal heat, their outrageous thirst, passing Sherry, the bored cloakroom girl, slumped on her stool with a paperback. He would scan their faces and turn back to the bar. It was 7:15. 6:30, she had said in the letter. He pulled it from his pocket again, thumbing its creases, examining the large, looping handwriting that confirmed she would be there. Love, J. For 5 weeks they had traded letters, his forwarded to the sorting office on Langley Street, where she had taken out P.O. Box 13, the one the postmistress had confided that nobody ever wanted. They had seen each other only 5 or 6 times, and their meetings tended to be brief, too brief, confined to the few occasions that either his or Lawrence's work schedule allowed. But what he could not always convey to her in person, he had said in print. He wrote almost every day, and he told her everything, without shame or embarrassment. It was as if a dam had been breached. He told her how much he missed her, of his life abroad, how until now he had felt perpetually restless, as if in constant earshot of a conversation that was going on somewhere else. He laid his faults before her, selfish, stubborn, often uncaring, and told her how she had caused him to start ironing them out. He told her he loved her again and again, relishing the appearance of the words on paper. In contrast, her letters were short and to the point. "Meet me here," they said, or "Not at that time, make it 30 minutes later," or simply, "Yes, me too." At first he had been afraid that such brevity meant she felt little for him, and found it hard to square the person she was when they were together, intimate, affectionate, teasing, concerned for his welfare, with the words she wrote. One night, when she had arrived very late, Lawrence, he discovered, had come home early and she had been forced to invent a sick friend to get out of the house at all. She had found him drunk and churlish at the bar.
"Nice of you to stop by," he had said sarcastically, raising a glass to her.
He had drunk 4 double whiskies in the 2 hours he had waited. She had pulled off her headscarf, ordered a martini, and a second later cancelled it.
"Not staying."
"I don't want to watch you like this." He had berated her for the lack of all the things he felt from her, the lack of time, the lack of anything on paper that he could hold to him, ignoring the restraining hand that Felipe the barman had laid on his arm. What he felt terrified him, and he wanted to hurt her for it.
"What's the matter? Scared of putting down anything that might be used in evidence against you?"
He had hated himself as he said the words, knew he had become ugly, the object of pity he had tried so desperately to conceal from her. Jennifer had turned on her heel and walked swiftly up the stairs, ignoring his yelled apology, his demand for her to return. He had left a 1-word message in the P.O. box the following morning, and 2 long, guilt-ridden days later, he had received a letter. "Boot, I do not give my feelings easily to paper. I do not give them easily at all. You deal in the business of words, and I cherish each one you write to me. But do not judge my feelings by the fact that I don't respond in kind. I am afraid that if I tried to write as you do, you would feel badly let down. Like I once said, my opinion is rarely sought on anything, let alone something as important as this, and I don't find it easy to volunteer it. Trust that I am here. Trust me by my actions, my affections. Those are my currency. Yours, J." He had cried with shame and relief when he got it. He suspected afterwards that part of it, the part she did not talk about, was that she still bore the humiliation of that hotel room, no matter how hard he tried to convince her of his reason for not making love to her. For all that he said, he suspected she was still not convinced that she was more than just another of his married women.
"Your girlfriend not coming?"
Felipe slid into the seat beside him. The club had filled up now. Tables buzzed with chatter. A pianist played in the corner. And there was another half hour before Felipe would take up his trumpet. Overhead, the fan whirred lazily, hardly stirring the thick air.
"Now you ain't gonna end up slaughtered again, are you? It's coffee. You wanna be careful, Tony. I told you, it's coffee, not a drink. One of these days you're gonna fool around with the wrong woman. One day a husband's gonna do for you."
Anthony held up his hand for more coffee.
"I'm flattered, Felipe, that you take my welfare so seriously, but first, I've always been careful in my choice of partner."
He flashed a sideways grin.
"Believe me, you have to have a certain confidence in your powers of discretion to let a dentist loose with a drill in your mouth less than an hour after you've, entertained his wife."
Felipe couldn't help but laugh.
"You're a shameless man." "Not at all, because second, there will be no more married women."
"Just single ones, eh?"
"No. No more women. This is the one."
"The 101, you mean?"
Felipe barked a laugh.
"You're gonna tell me you're taking up Bible studies next."
And there was the irony. The more he wrote, and the harder he tried to convince her of what he felt, the more it seemed she suspected that the words were meaningless, that they tripped from his pen too easily. She had teased him about it several times, but he could taste the gunmetal bite of truth underneath. She and Felipe saw the same thing. Someone incapable of real love. Someone who would desire the unobtainable for just as long as it took to get it.
"One day, Felipe, my friend, I might just surprise you." "Tony, you sit in this place long enough, there are no more surprises. And look, talk of the devil, here comes your birthday present. It's so nicely wrapped, too."
Anthony glanced up and saw a pair of emerald green silk shoes negotiating the stairs. She walked slowly, one hand on the rail, as she had the first time he watched her coming down her front steps, revealing herself inch by inch, until her face, flushed and slightly damp, was directly before him. At the sight of her, his breath was briefly knocked from his chest. "I'm so sorry," she said as she kissed his cheek. He got a warm waft of perfume, could feel the moisture on her cheeks transferring to his own. Her fingers squeezed his lightly. "It was difficult getting here. Is there somewhere we can sit?" Felipe showed them to a booth, and she attempted to smooth her hair.
"I thought you weren't coming," he said, after Felipe had brought her a martini.
"Lawrence's mother made one of her unannounced visits. She will go on and on. I sat there pouring tea and thought I was going to scream."
"Where's he?"
He reached out a hand under the table and enclosed hers in it. God, he loved the feel of it. "Trip to Paris. He's meeting someone from Citroën about brake linings or something."
"If you were mine," Anthony said, "I wouldn't leave you alone for a minute."
"I bet you say that to all the girls."
"Don't," he said. "I hate that."
"Oh, you can't pretend you haven't used all your best lines on other women first. I know you, Boot. You told me, remember?"
He sighed. "So this is where honesty gets you. No wonder I never felt like trying it before."
He felt her shuffle along the seat so that they were close to each other, her legs curling around his, and something in him relaxed. She drank her martini, then a second, and there in the snug booth, with her beside him, he enjoyed a fleeting sense of possession. The band struck up. Felipe began to play his trumpet, and as she watched, her face illuminated by candlelight and pleasure, he watched her secretly, knowing with unfathomable certainty that she would be the only woman who could ever make him feel like this.
"Dance?"
There were other couples already on the floor, swaying to the music in the near darkness. He held her, breathing in the scent of her hair, feeling the pressure of her body against his, allowing himself to believe it was just the two of them, the music and the softness of her skin.
Jenny?
Yes?
Kiss me.
Every kiss since that first in Postman's Park had been a hidden thing. In his car, in a quiet suburban street, at the back of a restaurant. He could see the protest forming on her lips. Here, in front of all these people. He waited for her to tell him it was too much of a risk. But perhaps something in his expression registered, chimed in her, and her face softening as it always did when it was just millimetres from his own. She lifted a hand to his cheek and kissed him, a tender, passionate kiss. "You do make me happy, you know," she said quietly, confirming to him that she hadn't been before. Her fingers entwined in his, possessive, certain. "I can't pretend this does, but you do. So leave him." The words were out of his mouth before he knew what he was saying. What? Leave him. Come and live with me. I've been offered a posting. We could just disappear.
Don't.
Don't what?
Talk like that. You know it's impossible.
Why?
He said. He could hear the demanding note in his voice.
Why is it impossible?
We don't really know each other at all.
Yes, we do. You know we do.
He lowered his head and kissed her again. He felt her resist a little this time and pulled her to him, his hand on the small of her back, feeling her meld against him. The music receded. He lifted her hair from her nape with one hand, feeling the dampness underneath, and paused. Her eyes were closed, her head tilted slightly to one side, her lips very slightly parted. Her blue eyes opened, bored into his, and then she smiled. A heady half-smile that spoke of her own desire. How often did a man see a smile like that? Not an expression of tolerance, of affection, of obligation. Yes, all right, dear, if you really want to. Jennifer Sterling wanted him. She wanted him like he wanted her.
"I'm awfully hot," she said, her eyes not leaving his.
"Then we should get some air."
He took her hand and led her through the dancing couples. He could feel her laughing, reaching for the shirt at his back. They reached the comparative privacy of the corridor, where he stifled her laughter with kisses, his hands entwined in her hair, her warm mouth under his lips. She kissed him back with increasing fervour, not hesitating even when they heard footsteps pass. He felt her hands reach under his shirt, and the touch of her fingers was so intensely pleasurable that he briefly lost the power of thought. What to do? What to do? Their kisses grew deeper, more urgent. He knew that if he didn't take her, he would explode. He broke off, his hands on her face, saw her eyes heavy with longing. Her flushed skin was his answer. He looked to his right. Sherry was still deep in her book, the cloakroom redundant in the sticky August heat. She was blind to them after years of amorous fumblings around her.
"Sherry," he said, pulling a 10-shilling note from his pocket, "how do you fancy a tea break?"
She raised an eyebrow, then took the money and slid off her stool. 10 minutes, she said baldly. And then Jennifer, giggling, was following him into the cloakroom, breathless as he pulled the dark curtain as far across the little alcove as it would go. Here, the dark was soft and total, the scent of 1,000 discarded coats lingering in the air. Wrapped around each other, they stumbled to the end of the coat rail, the wire hangers clashing around their heads like whispering cymbals. He couldn't see her, but then she was facing him, her back against the wall, her lips on his, with a greater urgency now, murmuring his name. Some part of him knew, even then, that she would be his undoing.
"Tell me to stop," he whispered,
his hand on her breast, his breath thick in his throat, knowing this would be the only possible break. "Tell me to stop." The shake of her head was a mute refusal.
"Oh, God,"
he murmured. And then they were frantic, her breath coming in short gasps,
her leg lifted around his. He slid his hands underneath her dress, palms sliding against the silk and lace of her underwear. He felt her fingers threaded in his hair, one hand reaching for his trousers, and some part of him was mildly shocked, as if he had imagined her natural sense of decorum would preclude such an appetite. Time slowed. The air became a vacuum around them, their breath mingling. Fabrics were pushed aside. Legs became damp. His braced to support her weight, and then, oh God, he was inside her, and just for a moment everything stopped. Her breath, movement, his heart, the world, possibly. He felt her open mouth against his, heard her intake of breath, and then they were moving, and he was one thing, could feel only one thing, deaf to the clashing hangers, the muffled music on the other side of the wall, the muted exclamation of someone greeting a friend in the corridor. It was him and Jennifer, moving slowly, then faster, her hold on him tighter. The laughter gone now, his lips on her skin, her breath in his ear. He felt the increasing violence of her movements, felt her disappear into some distant part of herself. He knew, with some still rational part of him, that she mustn't make a sound. And as he heard the cry build at the back of her throat, as her head tipped back, he stopped it with his mouth, absorbing the sound, her pleasure, so surely that it became his own. Vicariously. And then they were stumbling, his legs cramping as he lowered her, and they were pressed together, holding each other, he feeling the tears on her cheeks as she shivered, limp in his arms. Afterwards he couldn't remember what he told her at that point. "I love you. I love you. Never let me go. You are so beautiful." He remembered wiping the tears from her eyes tenderly, her whispered reassurances, half-smiles, her kisses, her kisses, her kisses. And then, as if at the end of a distant tunnel, they heard Sherry's conspicuous cough. Jennifer straightened her clothes, allowed him to smooth her skirt, and he felt the pressure of her hand as she led him the few feet back into the light, the real world, his legs still weak, his breathing not yet regular, already regretting leaving that dark heaven behind. 15 minutes, Sherry said into her paperback, as Jennifer stepped out into the corridor. Her dress was neat, only the flattening of the back of her hair a clue to what had transpired. "If you say so." He slipped the girl another note. Jennifer turned to him, her face still flushed. "My shoe!" she exclaimed, holding up one stockinged foot. She burst out laughing, covered her mouth. He wanted to rejoice at her mischievous expression. He had feared she would be suddenly pensive or regretful. "I'll get it," he said, ducking back in. "Who says chivalry's dead?" Sherry muttered. He fumbled in the dark for the emerald silk shoe, his free hand lifting to his hair, lest it should be as evidential as hers. He fancied he could smell the musty scent of sex now mingling with the traces of perfume. Oh, but he had never felt anything like that. He closed his eyes for a moment, conjuring up the feel of her, the feel of... "Well, hello, Mrs. Sterling!" He located the shoe under an upturned chair and heard Jennifer's voice, a brief murmur of conversation. As he emerged, a young man had stopped by the cloakroom. A cigarette was wedged in the corner of his mouth, and he had his arm around a dark-haired girl who was clapping enthusiastically in the direction of the music. "How are you, Reggie?" Jennifer was holding out a hand, which he took, briefly. Anthony saw the young man's eyes slide towards him.
"I'm fine. Mr. Sterling with you?"
She barely missed a beat. "Lawrence is away on business. This is Anthony, a friend of ours. He's very kindly taking me out this evening." A hand snaked across.
"How do you do?"
Anthony's smile felt like a grimace. Reggie stood there, his eyes lifting to Jennifer's hair, the faint flush on her cheeks, something unpleasantly knowing in his gaze. He nodded towards her feet.
"You seem to be missing a shoe,"
My dancing shoes. I checked them in and got a mixed pair back. Silly of me. Her voice was cool. Seamless. Anthony held it out.
Found it, he said. I put your outdoor shoes back under the coat.
Sherry sat motionless beside him, her face buried in her book. Reggie smirked, clearly enjoying the hiatus he had caused. Anthony wondered briefly whether he was waiting to be offered a drink or asked to join them, but he was damned if he'd do either. Thankfully, Reggie's female companion tugged at his arm.
Come on, Reggie. Look, Mel's over there.
Duty calls.
Reggie waved and was gone, weaving through the tables.
Enjoy your dancing.
Damn, she said under her breath. Damn, damn, damn. He steered her back into the main room.
Let's get a drink.
They slid into their booth, the rapture of 10 minutes ago already a distant memory. Anthony had disliked the young man on sight. But for that loss, he could have thumped him. She downed a martini in a single gulp. In other circumstances, he would have found it amusing. Now, however, it signified her anxiety.
Stop fretting, he said. There's nothing you can do.
But what if he tells...
So leave Lawrence. Simple.
Anthony...
You can't go back to him, Jenny. Not after that. You know it.
She pulled out a compact and rubbed at the mascara under her eyes. Apparently dissatisfied, she snapped it shut.
Jenny,
think about what you're asking me. I'd lose everything. My family, everything my life is. I'd be disgraced.
But you'd have me. I'd make you happy. You said so.
It's different for women. I'd be...
We'll get married.
You really think Lawrence would ever divorce me? You think he'd let me go?
Her face had clouded. I know he's not right for you. I am.
When she didn't reply, he said,
Are you happy with him? Is this the life you want for yourself? To be a prisoner in a gilded cage?
I'm not a prisoner. Don't be ridiculous.
You just can't see it.
No. That's how you want to see it. Larry isn't a bad man.
You can't see it yet, Jenny. But you're going to become more and more unhappy with him.
Now you're a fortune teller as well as a hack. He still felt raw, and it made him reckless.
He'll squash you, extinguish the things that make you, you. Jennifer, the man's a fool, a dangerous fool, and you're too blind to see it.
Her face whipped round. How dare you? How dare you? He saw the tears in her eyes, and the heat within him dissipated. He reached into his pocket for a handkerchief. Made to wipe her eyes with it, but she blocked his hand. Don't! She murmured. Reggie might be watching.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to make you cry. Please, don't cry.
They sat in an unhappy silence, staring at the dance floor. It's just so hard, she murmured. I thought I was happy. I thought my life was fine. And then you came along and nothing... Nothing makes sense anymore. All the things I had planned, houses, children, holidays, I don't want them now. I don't sleep. I don't eat. I think about you all the time. I know I won't be able to stop thinking about that. She gestured towards the cloakroom. But the thought of actually leaving, she sniffed, it's like looking into an abyss.
An abyss?
She blew her nose. Loving you would come at such a cost. My parents would disown me. I'd have nothing to bring with me, and I can't do anything, Anthony. I'm no good for anything but living as I do. What if I couldn't even run your house for you?
You think I care about that?
You would, eventually. A spoilt little tie-tie. That was what you first thought of me, and you were right. I can make men love me, but I can't do anything else. Her bottom lip was trembling. He wished, furious with himself, that he had never used that word against her. They sat in silence, watching Felipe play, both locked in thought.
I've been offered a job, he said eventually, in New York, reporting the United Nations.
She turned to him. You're leaving?
Listen to me. For years I've been a mess.
When I was in Africa, I fell apart. When I was at home, I couldn't wait to get back there. I could never settle, could never escape the feeling that I should be somewhere else, doing something else.
He took her hand.
And then I met you. Suddenly I can see a future. I can see the point of staying still, of building a life in one place. Working at the UN would be fine. I just want to be with you.
I can't. You don't understand.
What?
I'm afraid.
Of what he'd do.
Rage built within him.
You think I'm frightened of him? You think I couldn't protect you?
No. Not of him. Please lower your voice.
Of those ridiculous people you hang around with. You really care about their opinions. They're empty, stupid people with...
Stop it! It's not them.
What then? What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of you.
He battled to understand, but I wouldn't.
I'm afraid of what I feel for you. I'm afraid to love somebody this much.
Her voice broke. She folded her cocktail napkin, twisting it between her slim fingers.
I love him, but not like this. I've been fond of him, and I've despised him, and much of the time we exist reasonably well together, and I've made my accommodations, and I know I can live like this. Do you understand? I know I can live like this for the rest of my life, and it won't be so bad. Plenty of women have worse.
And with me?
She didn't answer for so long that he almost repeated the question. If I let myself love you, it would consume me. There would be nothing but you. I would be constantly afraid that you might change your mind. And then if you did, I would die.
He took her hands, raised them to his lips, ignoring her whispered protests. He kissed her fingertips. He wanted to take her whole self into him. He wanted to wrap himself around her and never let her go. I love you, Jennifer, he said. I will never stop loving you. I have never loved anyone before you, and there will never be anyone after you.
You say that now, she said.
Because it's true. He shook his head. I don't know what else you want me to say.
Nothing. You've said everything. I have them all on paper. Your beautiful words.
She pulled her hand from his and reached for her martini. When she spoke again, it was as if she was talking to herself.
But that doesn't make it any easier.
She had withdrawn her leg from his. He felt its absence like a pain. What are you saying? He fought to keep his voice under control. You love me, but there's no hope for us.
Her face crumpled a little. Anthony, I think we both know...
She didn't finish. She didn't need to. Arthur James is no longer listed as in a relationship. Male to female via Facebook update. Name changed. Chapter 10. She had watched Mrs. Sterling disappear from the office party, and Mr. Sterling grow increasingly agitated, until he had slammed down his tumbler and strode out into the hallway after them. Almost vibrating with excitement, she had wanted to follow, to see what was happening. But Moira Parker had enough self-control to stay where she was. No one else seemed to notice he had gone. Finally, he walked back into the party. She watched him over the rise and fall of people's heads, utterly marooned. His face betrayed little emotion, yet she saw strain in his features that even she had never witnessed before. What happened out there? What had Jennifer Sterling been doing with that young man? An almost indecent spark of gratification burst into life within her, feeding her imagination until it was glowing. Perhaps he had been forced to see his wife for the selfish creature she was. Moira knew that when the office reopened, just a few words would cause the woman's behaviour to become the talk of it. But, she thought with sudden melancholy, that would mean Mr. Sterling would be too, and the prospect of that brave, dignified, stoic man
as the butt of flippant secretarial gossip, made her heart constrict. How could she humiliate him in the one place he should be considered above everyone? Moira stood helpless on the other side of the room, afraid to attempt to comfort her boss, but so far removed from the revelry of her co-workers that she might have been in a different room. She watched as he went towards the makeshift bar, and with a grimace accepted a cup of what looked like whiskey. He downed it in one and demanded another. After a third, he nodded to those around him and went to his office. Moira made her way through the throng. It was 11:15. The music had stopped, and people had begun to go home. Those who were not leaving were evidently taking themselves somewhere else, away from their colleagues' eyes. Behind the coat stand, Stevens was kissing that redhead from the typing pool as if nobody could see them. The girl's skirt had ridden halfway up her thighs, and his pudgy fingers plucked at the flesh-coloured suspenders now exposed to view. She realized that the postboy had not returned after taking Elsie Machinsky to fetch a taxi, and she wondered what she might say to Elsie later, to let her know that she was aware of this, even if nobody else had noticed. Was everyone except her obsessed with matters of the flesh? Were the formal greetings, the polite conversation of every day, simply a cover for a bacchanalian nature that she lacked? "We're going on to the Cat's Eye Club. Fancy joining us, Moira? Let your hair down a little?" "Oh, she won't come," Felicity Harewood said, so dismissively that, for just a moment, Moira thought she might surprise them all and say, "Why, yes, actually, I'd love to join you." But the light was on in Mr. Sterling's office. Moira did what any other responsible personal assistant to a chief executive would do. She stayed behind to clear up. It was almost 1 a.m. by the time she finished. She didn't do it all herself. The new girl in accounts held a bag for her when she collected the empty bottles, and the head of sales, a tall South African man, helped collect the paper cups, singing loudly from his spot in the ladies' cloakroom. Eventually it was just Moira, scrubbing at the stains on the linoleum that might yet be removed, and using a dustpan and brush to pick up the crisps and peanuts that had somehow become trodden into the tiles. The men could move the desks back when they returned to the office. Apart from a few fluttering foil streamers, the place looked almost workmanlike again. She looked at the battered Christmas tree, its decorations broken or missing, and the little postbox, which had become rather squashed since someone had sat on it, the crepe paper peeling away forlornly from the sides. She was glad that her mother wasn't alive to see her precious baubles tossed aside so carelessly. She was packing away the last of it when she caught sight of Mr. Sterling. He was sitting in his leather chair, his head in his hands. The table near the door supported the remnants of the drink, and almost on impulse, she poured 2 fingers of whiskey. She walked across the office and knocked. He was still wearing his tie, formal even at this hour. "I've just been clearing up," she said when he stared at her. She felt suddenly embarrassed. He glanced out of the window, and she realized he had not been aware that she was still there.
"Very kind of you, Moira," he said quietly. "Thank you."
He took the whiskey from her and drank it. Slowly, this time. Moira took in her boss's collapsed face, the tremor of his hands. She stood close to the corner of his desk, certain for once that she was justified in simply being there. On his desk, in neat piles, sat the letters she had left out for signing earlier that day. It felt like an age ago. "Would you like another?" she said, when he had finished it. "There's a little more in the bottle."
"I suspect I've had quite enough."
There was a lengthy silence.
"What am I supposed to do, Moira?"
He shook his head, as if engaged in some ongoing internal argument that she couldn't hear.
"I give her everything. Everything. She has never wanted for a thing."
His voice was halting, broken.
"They say everything's changing. Women want something new, God knows what. Why does everything have to change?
Not all women, she said quietly. An awful lot of women think a husband who would provide for them, and who they could look after, make a home for, would be a wonderful thing to have.
You think so?
His eyes were red-rimmed with exhaustion. Oh, I know it. A man to make a drink for when he came home, to cook for and fuss over a little. It would be perfectly lovely. She coloured.
Then why?
He sighed. Mr. Sterling, she said suddenly, you're a wonderful boss, a wonderful man, really. She ploughed on. She's awfully lucky to have you. She must know that. And you don't deserve... You didn't deserve... She tailed away, knowing even as she spoke that she was breaching some unspoken protocol. I'm so sorry, she said, when the silence stretched uncomfortably beyond her words. Mr. Sterling, I didn't mean to presume...
Is it wrong?
He said, so quietly, that at first she wasn't sure what he was saying.
For a man to want to be held. Does that make him less of a man?
She felt tears prick her eyes, and something underneath them, something shrewder and sharper. She moved over a little and placed an arm lightly around his shoulders. Oh, the feel of him. Tall and broad, his jacket sitting so beautifully on his frame. She knew she would revisit this moment again and again for the rest of her life. The feel of him, the liberty to touch. She was almost faint with pleasure. When he did nothing to stop her, she leant over a little and, holding her breath, placed her head on his shoulder. A gesture of comfort, of solidarity. This is how it would feel, she thought blissfully. She wished, just briefly, that someone would take a picture of them, pressed together so intimately. Then he lifted his head and she felt a sudden pang of alarm and shame. I'm so sorry, I'll get... She straightened, choking on the words. But his hand was on hers, warm, close.
Moira, he said,
and his eyes were half closed, his voice a croak of despair and desire. His hands were on her face, tilting it, pulling it down to meet his, and his mouth searching, desperate, determined. A sound escaped her, a gasp of shock and delight, and then she was returning his kiss. He was only the second man she had kissed, and this instance was beyond the realms of what had preceded it, coloured as it was by years of unrequited longing. Little explosions took place inside her, as her blood raced around at super speed, and her heart fought to escape her chest. She felt him easing her back across the desk, his murmuring voice hoarse and urgent, his hands at her collar, her breasts, his breath warm on her collarbone. Inexperienced, she knew little of where to put her hands, her limbs, but found herself clutching him, wanting to please, lost in new sensations. I adore you, she told him silently. Take what you want from me. But even as she gave herself up to pleasure, Moira knew she must keep some part of her aware enough to remember. Even as he enveloped her, entered her, her skirt hitched above her hips, his ink bottle digging uncomfortably into her shoulder, she knew she was no threat to Jennifer Sterling. The Jennifers of this world would always be the ultimate prize, in a way that a woman like her never could. But Moira Parker had one advantage. She was appreciative, in a way that Jennifer Sterling, that those who had always had things handed to them, never were. And she knew that even one brief night could be the most precious of all precious things, and that if this was to be the defining event of her romantic life, some part of her should be conscious enough to file it safely somewhere. Then, when it was over, she could relive it on those endless evenings when she was alone again. She was sitting in the large drawing room at the front of the house when he returned home. She was wearing a raspberry tweed swing coat and hat, her black patent handbag and matching gloves resting neatly on her lap. She heard his car pull up, saw the lights outside dim, and stood.
She pulled back the curtain a few inches and watched him sitting in the driving seat, letting his thoughts tick over with the dying engine. She glanced behind her at her suitcases, then moved away from the window. He came in and dropped his overcoat on the hall chair. She heard his keys fall into the bowl they kept for that purpose on the table, and the clatter of something falling over. The wedding photograph? He hesitated for a moment outside the drawing-room door, then opened it and found her. "I think I should leave." She saw his eyes go to the packed suitcase at her feet, the one she had used when she'd left hospital all those weeks earlier.
"You think you should leave?"
She took a deep breath, spoke the words she had rehearsed for the last 2 hours. "This isn't making either of us very happy. We both know that." He walked past her to the drinks cabinet and poured himself 3 fingers of whiskey. The way he held the decanter made her wonder how much he had drunk since she had returned home. He took the cut-glass tumbler to a chair and sat down heavily. He lifted his eyes to hers, held them for a few minutes. She fought the urge to fidget.
"So," he said, "do you have something else in mind? Something that might make you happier?"
His tone was sarcastic, unpleasant. Drink had unleashed something in him. But she was not afraid. She had the freedom of knowing he was not her future. They stared at each other, combatants locked in an uneasy battle. "You know, don't you?" she said. He drank some of his whiskey, his eyes not leaving her face.
"What do I know, Jennifer?"
She took a breath. "That I love someone else, and that it's not Reggie Carpenter. It never was." She fiddled with her handbag as she spoke. "I worked it out this evening. Reggie was a mistake, a diversion from the truth. But you're so angry with me all the time. You have been ever since I got out of hospital. Because you know, just as I do, that someone else loves me and isn't afraid to tell me so. That's why you didn't want me to ask too many questions. That's why my mother and everyone else has been so keen for me simply to get on with things. You didn't want me to remember. You never have." She had half expected him to explode with anger. But instead he nodded. Then, as she held her breath, he raised his glass to her.
"So, this lover of yours, what time will he be here?"
He peered at his watch, then at her cases.
"I assume he's picking you up."
"He..." She swallowed. "I... it's not like that."
"So you're going to meet him somewhere?"
He was so calm, as if he was almost enjoying this. "Eventually, yes."
"Eventually," he repeated. "What's the delay?"
I don't know where he is."
"You don't know where he is?"
Lawrence downed the whiskey. He stood laboriously and poured himself another. "I can't remember. You know I can't. Things are coming back to me, and I don't have it clear in my head yet, but I know now that this," she gestured around the room, "feels wrong for a reason. It feels wrong because I'm in love with someone else. So I'm very sorry, but I have to go. It's the right thing to do for both of us." He nodded.
"May I ask what this gentleman, your lover, has that I don't?"
The streetlight outside the window stuttered. "I don't know," she admitted. "I just know that I love him, and that he loves me."
"Oh, you do you? And what else do you know? Where he lives? What he does for a living? How he's going to keep you with your extravagant tastes? Will he buy you new frocks? Allow you a housekeeper? Jewellery?"
"I don't care about any of that."
"You certainly used to care about it."
"I'm different now. I just know he loves me, and that's what really matters. You can mock me all you want, Lawrence, but you don't know..." He sprang up from his seat, and she shrank back.
"Oh, I know all about your lover, Jenny," he bellowed.
He pulled a crumpled envelope from his inside pocket, brandishing it at her.
"You really want to know what happened to you? You really want to know where your lover is?
Flecks of spittle flew, and his eyes were murderous. She froze. Her breath stalled in her chest.
This isn't the first time you've left me. Oh, no. I know. Just like I know about him, because I found his letter in your bag after the accident.
She saw the familiar handwriting on the envelope and was unable to tear her eyes from it.
This is from him. In it, he asks you to meet him. He wants to run away with you, just the two of you, away from me, to start a new life together.
He grimaced, half in anger, half in grief.
Is it coming back to you now, darling?
He thrust it at her, and she took it with trembling fingers. She opened it and read.
My dearest and only love, I meant what I said. I've come to the conclusion that the only way forward is for one of us to take a bold decision. I'm going to take the job. I'll be at Platform 4, Paddington, at 7:15 on Friday evening. Ring a bell, does it, Jenny?
Yes, she whispered. Images flashed in her mind's eye. Dark hair, a crumpled linen jacket, a little park dotted with men in blue. Boot.
Yes, you know him. Yes, it's all coming back to you.
Yes, it's coming back to me. She could almost see him. He was so close now.
Obviously not all of it.
What do you...
He's dead, Jennifer. He died in the car. You survived the crash and your gentleman friend died. Dead at the scene, according to the police. So nobody's out there waiting for you. There's no one at Paddington Station. There's nobody left for you to bloody remember.
The room had started to move around her. She heard him speak, but the words refused to make sense, to take root in anything meaningful. No, she said, trembling now.
Oh, I'm afraid so. I could probably dig out the newspaper reports if you really wanted proof. We, your parents and I, kept your name out of the public eye for obvious reasons. But they reported his death.
No! She pushed at him, her arms swinging rhythmically at his torso. No! 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 She wouldn't hear what he was saying.
He died at the scene. Stop it! Stop saying that!
She launched herself at him now, wild, uncontrolled, shrieking. She heard her voice as if at a distance, was dimly aware of her fists coming into contact with his face, his chest, and then his stronger hands grabbing her wrists until she couldn't move. He was immovable. What he had said was immovable. Dead. She sank onto the chair, and eventually he released her. She felt as if she had shrunk, as if the room had expanded and swallowed her.
My dearest and only love.
Her head lowered so that she could see only the floor, and tears slid down her nose and onto the expensive rug. A long time later, she looked up at him. His eyes were closed, as if the scene was too unpleasant for him to contemplate. If you knew, she began, if you could see I was beginning to remember, why didn't you tell me the truth? He was no longer angry. He sat down in the chair opposite, suddenly defeated.
Because I hoped. When I realized you remembered nothing, that we could put it behind us. I hoped we might just carry on as if none of it had happened. My dearest and only love.
She had nowhere to go. Boot was dead. He had been dead the whole time. She felt foolish, bereft, as if she had imagined the whole thing in a fit of girlish indulgence.
And, Lawrence's voice broke the silence, I didn't want you to have to bear the guilt of knowing that without you, this man might still be alive.
And there it was, a pain so sharp she felt as if she'd been impaled.
Whatever you think of me, Jennifer, I believed you might be happier this way.
Time passed. She couldn't say afterwards whether it had been hours or minutes. After a while, Lawrence stood up. He poured and drank another glass of whiskey, as easily as if it had been water. Then he placed his tumbler neatly on the silver tray. So, what happens now? She said dully.
I go to bed.
I'm really very tired. He turned and walked towards the door. I suggest you do the same.
After he had gone, she sat there for some time. She could hear him moving heavily on the floorboards upstairs, the wearied, drunken path of his footsteps, the creak of the bedstead as he climbed in. He was in the master bedroom. Her bedroom. She read the letter again. Read of a future that wouldn't be hers. A love she had not been able to live without. She read the words of a man who had loved her more than even he could convey. A man for whose death she had been unwittingly responsible. She finally saw his face. Animated, hopeful, full of love. Jennifer Sterling fell to the floor, curled up with the letter clutched to her chest and silently began to cry.
Dear Jay, I know I've been a cow and I'm sorry. I know you're coming home tomorrow, but I will not be there to see you. David and I are getting married, and I will not be seeing you any more. Deep down inside me, I love you. But the other side, I love David even more. Bye. G. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Female to male, via letter.
Chapter 11. He saw them through the window of the coffee shop, half obscured by steam, even on this late summer evening. His son was seated at the table nearest the window, his legs swinging as he read the menu. He paused on the pavement, taking in the longer limbs, the loss of the soft edges that had marked him out as a child. He could just make out the man he might become. Anthony felt his heart constrict. He tucked his parcel under his arm and walked in. The cafe had been Clarissa's choice, a large, bustling place where the waitresses wore old-fashioned uniforms and white pinafores. She had called it a tea room, as if she was embarrassed by the word cafe.
Philip?
Daddy?
He stopped beside the table, noting with pleasure the boy's smile as he caught sight of him.
Clarissa?
He added. She was less angry, he thought immediately. There had been a tautness about her face for the past few years that had made him feel guilty whenever they met. Now she looked back at him with a kind of curiosity, as one might examine something that might turn around and snap. Forensically, and from a distance.
You look very well, he said.
Thank you, she said.
And you've grown, he said to his son. Goodness, I think you've shot up 6 inches in 2 months.
3 months, and they do at that age.
Clarissa's mouth settled into the moo of mild disapproval he knew so well. It made him think briefly of Jennifer's lips. He didn't think he'd ever seen her do that thing with her mouth. Perhaps the way she was designed forbade it.
And you're well?
She said, pouring him a cup of tea and pushing it towards him.
Very, thank you. I've been working hard.
As always?
Yes. How about you, Philip? School all right?
His son's face was buried in the menu.
Answer your father.
Fine.
Good. Keeping your marks up?
I have his report here. I thought you might want to see it.
She fished in her bag and handed it to him. Anthony noted, with unexpected pride, the repeated references to Philip's decent character, his genuine efforts.
He's captain of the football.